Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online, there are still some phone lines open, so you can jump in and listen right on your phone. The number to dial, 347-884-8327. Once you're on the call, press 1. Lisa will screen your call, and we'll get to your questions. Anything you want to talk about tonight, it's wide open. Get your questions in early so we don't run out of time. 347-884-8327. And again, once you're on that call, press 1. Lisa will screen your call, and we'll get to the questions here in just a little bit. I'm going to start off with the update on the market demand index, what's going on with freight and rates, and then we'll jump right in and get to your questions, so get those lined up. All right, finally, we're seeing a little bit of a turnaround. We've got actually some mixed results on freight and demand this week. I monitor two different load boards, Internet Truck Stop, which puts out the market demand index, and TransCore, which puts out trend lines. And I'm going to go through kind of what's been going on here, but I will say that the market demand index finally took a bounce back up. It was the first time in 6 weeks. And it is up 9%, which is a pretty good jump. It's back up to 7.48, which also puts us right about that point where we have some negotiation power with the shippers and the brokers. So it's certainly a better place to be. It had been down 6 weeks in a row. Now it's back up 9%. Load availability was up 5%, and truck availability was down 5%. So that gives us roughly that 9% swing in the market demand index, because remember, it measures available loads against available trucks. So the index can go up if loads go up or if trucks go down. Conversely, the index can go down if loads go down or trucks go up or both. So last week we had loads up and trucks down, which is a good thing. What happened with rates? Rates were pretty flat. They fell 0.5%, which means they were down a penny to $1.89. Van rates down a penny to $1.68. Flatbed rates down a penny to $1.73. Reefer was off 2% to $2.01. It was $2.05 the week before. Specialized was off 1% down to $2.10. It was $2.12 the week before. Fuel was up a little bit, 2 cents week over week. That was all from Internet Truck Stop. They are predicting that we should see truck demand decreasing again this month, heading into August. If we follow the trends, we're probably not going to see real strong truck demand in August. But we could put this into perspective. Let's go over to TransCore trend lines and see what's going on. Now, for the week, TransCore didn't really pick up. The spot market load index for the week was off 2.4%. The truck index was off 1.3%. So overall, we probably lost about 1% for the week. So it was pretty flat. We'll probably see the increase in trend lines next week. Dry van load to truck ratio was up 0.6%. Flatbed load to truck ratio was down 1.5%. Reefer load to truck actually had a pretty good week, up 5.5%. Now, if we look at the month of July, this is measuring July against June this year. The spot market load index was down 12%. And the spot market truck index was up 18. So loads were down 12, trucks were down up 18. That's a 30% swing from July to June. But if we look at year over year, July of this year versus July of last year, the load index is up 128%. And the truck index is down 31%. So that means we're still, July was 160% above July of last year. So that's still pretty good news. The dry van load to truck ratio for the month, down 21%. Flatbed load to truck ratio for the month, down 35%. Reefer load to truck ratio for the month down 22%. But year over year, again, comparing July of 2010 to July of 2009, dry van load to truck is up 220%, flatbed load to truck up 249%, reefer load to truck up 286%. So pretty good numbers as long as we keep things in perspective. We kind of peaked in June. We do normally see a drop off midsummer, so that was part of it. But it was, I think it was also a correction from a really hot market. I think what we saw was freight slowing down like it typically does, but we also saw a lot of trucks getting back into the market because there was so much freight, so much demand. So I think all of that came together in July. Mid-June to end of July, and kind of put a little bit of a hurt on the index. But let me know what you're seeing on the road. Are you seeing any slowdown in freight or available loads? What are you seeing with rates? Jump in and let me know. Now, if you're listening online, there are still some phone lines open for you to get in on the call. 347-884-8327. We don't have a whole lot of questions either, so if you want to jump in, press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen your call, and we're going to get to those questions here in a little bit. Let's see. Let's head off to Colorado to start off tonight. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, two questions for you. I know that you were at the Vegas show, and there was an outfit there that had an inflatable trailer tail, and also in a combination with that is, I call it a clamshell. It's an air deflector that fits across the trailer in front of the tandems rather than having the sideboards. And I'm wondering if you've looked at that, doing that with the trailer that you're talking about, trying to get your maximum fuel mileage out of, and, you know, I understand about the tires and everything, but what are you looking at doing aerodynamically on the trailer? Or have you looked at any of that stuff? Or
yeah, and right now, I'll tell you, it's kind of a confusing market right now. I think we've got a lot of real-world testing to do. You know, we thought that trailer skirts were just the greatest thing since sliced bread, and I'm seeing more and more trailer skirts. But at the same time, I just read a report that said trailer skirts aren't doing nearly as much as all the makers claimed that they were. And I think part of it is that some of them aren't designed very well. You know, it's kind of like white singles. You know, everybody came out and said white singles get better fuel mileage, including me. But I tried to focus on the rolling resistance number, not just the tire style. And everybody said wide singles for fuel mileage, wide singles for fuel mileage. But if you look at many of the wide singles on the market, what's that?
Then they throw Bridgestones on, which have, you know, as much or more rolling resistance than a set of conventional duals.
Well, and not only Bridgestone, but many of the other manufacturers and even Michelin. You know, Michelin threw in their XDN2 and their XDA HT Plus. Those were horrible tires for fuel mileage. So there's a lot of confusion if everybody believed that it was just the wide single that would give you better fuel mileage. It's possible there were trucks that were being converted over and the fuel mileage went down because the rolling resistance was higher. I think we're seeing the same thing with the side skirts. If they're designed properly, we do see increases in that 5 to 6% range. If they're not designed right, I don't know, we might be losing fuel mileage in some cases. And then we've got some that, you know, you slap them on there and in 6 months or a year they're all beat up and they're not working right. So side skirts, I still think if I were going, well, and I might be, when we build our trailer, if I have to pick from what's on the market right now, I'm going to pick the Windyne because I think it's the best quality, the best overall design, the most flexibility. It slides with the tandems, so it keeps that gap nice and tight. A nose cone certainly works. I mean, that's proven technology. Air tabs are simple. We know there's a big problem at the back of the trailer. I'm just not sure about that whole inflatable thing, how that thing's going to work in the real world.
Yeah, I you know, and if you are in completely calm conditions or into a headwind, I can see the skirts. But how often do you travel directly into the wind? I mean, you're almost always in a quartering wind. And
right.
I fail to see how they really help that much, because basically you're increasing the windswept area by what, about 20 to 25%?
Pretty good increase,
you know? You're catching every last bit of side wind, and you know, for my money, that affects my fuel mileage more than a direct wind, because you know I'm in a Century class, so it's a fairly aerodynamic front end. So if I'm going directly into the wind, the aerodynamics really help me. But, you know, you still got things getting caught when you've got that quartering wind. And I guess the other thing that I found kind of interesting, I think it was in the June Road King magazine, they were talking about the different things that are being done for fuel mileage. And I think it's Livermore Labs. Actually, they showed a picture of a plywood mock-up where they were kind of reverse, treating the draft behind the tractor so that instead of having a side skirt, they had almost a combing that came from behind your truck tandems, your truck tires, and swept up towards the back of the trailer to try and streamline the air that's coming, wanting to go underneath the trailer instead of letting it hang right there behind the truck. It would actually like draft it out from underneath the truck.
That may be what there was the head of the SmartWay program, which was the government program that is, you know, it's screwed up. It's like every other government program. It's the thing that is supposed to approve green technology and fuel saving technology. But, you know, they put the SmartWay approval on tires that really aren't that fuel efficient, and trucks were being SmartWay approved, and I couldn't figure out why. There doesn't seem to be any clear criteria about what was approved and what wasn't. You know, typical government program. But the guy who was the head of...
Thank you for calling. Please leave your name and number, and I'll return your call.
Hey, Lisa. I think you've got
the
phone lines mixed
record
up.
Record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hold on 1 second. We got some phone lines mixed up. All right, so he left the SmartWay program, and, you know, he was there looking at all the aerodynamic devices, all the trailer modifications, all of that stuff, and he left the SmartWay program and started a private company. And I believe it's the company that is working on that design you just talked about. Here's the idea behind it. We thought trailer skirts might be the answer. Try to keep the air from getting underneath the trailer. Well, the new idea is it's really not a problem if the air gets under the trailer. We just need to clean up under the trailer, first of all. We don't want it to slam into the tandems. That's where we were creating a lot of drag. Once the air got underneath, it hits the tandems. But they came up with an idea that on the surface, to me, makes a lot of sense, because we've got the air underneath, which is dirty. We have it hitting the tandems, which is creating a lot of drag. But the other trailer problem that we have is that big low pressure right behind the trailer. So everybody
right.
was using, say, side skirts and a boat tail, or side skirts and this inflatable device. Well, none of the rear modifications seem to be working very well. Air tabs work, but not completely. The inflatable things I don't think are going to work in the real world. The boat tails, to me, are really complicated, and I'm not sure that's going to work very well in the real world. So their idea was, let the air get under the trailer. Don't worry about side skirts. Once it's under there, let's keep it clean, and then let's direct it through the tandems instead of letting it hit the tandems directly, and send it out the back, which starts to fill in that low pressure. So it's more like bringing it under the trailer and directing it out the back and filling in that low pressure. On the surface, it makes a lot of sense. It just, I don't know that there's been any real testing on it yet, and there's nothing manufactured that'll do it.
Yeah, and I remember 2 years ago at Louisville, they had the demonstration truck, the Cascadia, that they had done absolutely everything they could do on it. And
right.
I talked to the engineer for a while, and he was talking about the only thing that they really have left to do at this point is managing that flow underneath the tractor and underneath the trailer, and what they were trying to do with that demonstration truck. And it had basically full fenders on it and a ducting system that was trying to manage the airflow over the tires and get it smoothly underneath the trailer. So
right.
Well, anyway, I appreciate your time, because I know there's other guys who want to get on and talk, but I really appreciate this podcast, because, you know, it's something that you can go back and listen to, you know.
Well,
you being able to download it is cool.
Well, thanks. I like it because we're not so rushed. We can spend more time. We don't have to get to breaks. We don't have a ton of commercial time eating things up, and we can get a little more in-depth here, so I appreciate you listening.
Yeah, I would really appreciate, you keeping us updated on what you're doing with real-world trailer solutions.
I'll tell you right now, if we were to build the trailer today, and we're going to finish the truck first, but if we were to build the trailer today, I still need to do some research on trailer manufacturers just to kind of pick a favorite there. But, I want something fairly light. I want something really smooth-sided. And then the modifications are probably going to include the nose cone, the Windyne side fairings, just because I still think they're better than nothing. I've got some pretty good reports back from people on the Windyne. I think we can pick up a real-world 4 or 5% out of them. Air tabs on the back, And then the really low rolling resistance trailer tires, we might do some brake modifications. But if I had to build it today, that's the way we would build it.
Okay, well, thanks for your time, Kevin. Have a good evening.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And I'll continue to do more research before we build it. We've got a little bit of time. I mean, we're going to build the tractor first, and we're really focusing all our time and energy on...
You have reached the maximum time permitted for recording your message. If you are satisfied with your message, press 1. To listen to your message, press 2. To erase and re-record, press 3.
Okay, I'll stop calling people.
Yeah, what are you doing over there?
Still there? You have reached the maximum time permitted for recording your
message. Can you hang up that line or what?
With your message, press 1. To listen to your message, press 2. To erase and re-record, press 3.
Bruce is going to get that message with 35 minutes of the call.
Are you still there? You have reached the maximum time permitted for recording your message. If you are satisfied with your message, press 1. To listen to your message, press 2.
To
erase and re-record, press 3.
Hang up sooner or later.
Sorry you're having trouble. Your message has been sent. Goodbye.
Are you done messing around now?
I was trying to get Bruce on the line. He wanted to call in as a special guest.
Well, I'm not sure why the call out isn't working.
Oh. Anyways, back to the podcast. Sorry, everyone.
All right, back to the podcast, back to the calls. Let's see, we are off to Kentucky. Ali, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin? I have some questions again about Landstar.
Okay.
I think it was last week when you had the guy on from Landstar, and I'm still kind of skeptical about moving. I'm trying to convince myself, and now, I mean, since the call last week, now I'm starting to get unhappy with the company I'm with. So I guess what I've been talking to some of the drivers from Landstar, and I hear mixed results about things. I'm just wondering if you can enlighten me a little more on Landstar. I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's what this show's all about. You know, I always expect, and I tell people any time you're considering a carrier, any carrier, one of the steps that we do is we go out and talk to as many people who are there or have been there as possible. The more people I talk to, the better information I can get. If I talk to two guys and they both think it's the best thing since sliced bread, that's wonderful. But if I talk to 10 and I find two or three that hate it and they're ready to quit, well, that gives me more information. But sometimes, so if we can talk to 10, that's good. I mean, we might get, you know, good information out of that. But sometimes, you know, somebody says they hate it or they love it, my next question is always why. Tell me why. Because sometimes what I found is the reason somebody might hate a company is exactly why I might love it.
Okay.
So you have to look at the answers. You have to listen closely. You have to take some notes. You know, if somebody, there are people who will hate Landstar because they're either not self-motivated or they're not able to organize things or manage time. You don't have, you know, a fleet manager or a dispatcher keeping track of what you're doing. So if somebody is so used to running in a system like that, that they go find a load, they deliver that load, they leave that place, they go over, they get fuel, they, you know, grab something to eat, and in all that time they haven't thought about their next load because they're used to just calling up a fleet manager and saying, okay, where do I go next? Or what do you have? You know, you can't run like that in their system. You have to manage your time. I would be planning, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 loads out sometimes. I would pick one load off the board, and then I would start putting in load alerts so that the system starts letting me, you know, if I'm in Cleveland and I want to go to Dallas, well, before I ever leave Cleveland, I'm going to set up my load alerts for Dallas. And maybe I know that there's usually good loads out of Dallas going to Portland. Well, then I might also start setting up load alerts for Portland so that, you know, the system is always looking for me and staying two or three steps ahead. And if you're not good at managing that kind of stuff, you're just not going to do as well in their system.
Okay. So, like a lot of the drivers that I ran across are mostly, you know, van drivers. I do flatbed, and I mean, it's rare that I see, actually, it is rare that I see a Landstar, you know, step deck or a flatbed. So I haven't got too much insight from them as far as, you know, how their rates are over there and how, you know, how they're running and things of that nature. I ran across one driver who, you know, is leased on with the company I'm with now. And, I mean, I just hear mixed things. I don't want to do one of those things where the grass looked greener on the other side and come to find out it was brown.
No, and I don't want you to either. So I do want you to keep doing what you're doing. When you say you hear mixed results, this is when you start taking notes and keeping track of things. Like, what is, I don't know, what's the worst thing you've heard from somebody so far?
The worst thing I heard so far is just basically when you first going through the orientation process and get your first load and stuff like that, the deductions that come out, which I don't think I have a problem with that because I have my own trailer. But, you know, just basically the deductions that come out and then other things, sometimes they can't find the load. And I realize as I talk to drivers more and more, I mean, I haven't been driving that long, but as I talk to them more and more, I realize everybody doesn't have the same work ethic I have either. They could just be lazy. So I keep that in consideration.
Yeah, but not only that, think about what you just said. Too many deductions came out. Well, I'd like to know what they are because, you know, if it's just startup stuff, big deal. That's one time, and we should have enough cash on hand before we switch that doesn't really affect us. So this is what I mean about, like, keeping the list and keeping the notes, because that one, no big deal to me. The next one,
right,
can't find the load right away. Now, I kind of expect that. It's a new system. There's going to be a learning curve there. And some people learn faster than others. So for me, again, that's not a big deal because I'm going to learn as much about their system before I ever even get a load.
Right.
But you will find that the longer you are there, the better you get at it, you know, because there is a learning curve. So if those are the two complaints so far, those don't slow me down much.
Right, okay. Yeah, cause, I mean, like where I'm at now, I mean, we got to call around and find our own loads. And I mean, I've brokered a couple loads from Landstar and things like that. So I'm not dispatched, as you said. So that,
right.
I don't think I have a problem there as far as calling to find the loads. I mean, it sounds good and it sounds like what I'm looking for. I just, you know, I'm just trying to hear, like you said, get the positive and negatives and make a decision at that point. I do flatbed.
Here's the other big thing you need to be very careful of with Landstar. From what I understand, and I'm going to check again to see if this number is still true, but at one point, they only contracted 3 out of every 100 applications they took.
Right. Right.
And so the one thing you have to do is make sure you can get approved before you even think about leaving where you are.
Right, right. Okay. Okay. All right, now I have one other question about the Evanston coolant?
Evans, yeah.
Evans coolant. Where would I find that coolant at and, and get it changed out and everything? You said you have to change the thermostat.
You don't have to, but that's, you know, there's several things going on with Evans. And look, the first one is, hands down, it's the best coolant on the market to protect your engine.
Okay.
You know, no water, so we don't have to worry about corrosion inhibitors and all those other things. No water to boil, so we don't have to worry about cavitation. If for some reason the truck did ever overheat, this stuff doesn't boil till 375 degrees, so you have much, much better protection. So that's step number one, and it's a lifetime coolant. It never wears out. You know, as long as we keep it in the truck, it'll last longer than the truck. So that's step one. It's really the best coolant on the market. Step two is, do we want to use that to improve our fuel mileage? And the way we would do that is, because it protects so well, now we can run the engine hotter than we normally do, because diesels are more efficient the hotter we run them. And do we want to keep the fan off as much as possible? Because when the fan's running, we lose 40 to 50 horsepower, which uses fuel and takes away from performance. So if we want to do that second step, then yes, we put in hotter thermostats and we put in what's called a resistor pack so that we can set the fan on temperature higher. Now, as far as where you can get it done, do you ever get anywhere near Tennessee?
I live in Tennessee.
Well, Crossville, right here at Truck City Service, we are really their number one installer on heavy trucks.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's a good deal.
All right.
Okay.
So do you know where it is?
No, I know where Crossville is. I don't know where that.
Exit 311 Plateau Road, right off the exit.
Exit 311 Plateau Road. Okay.
Yep.
Okay,
right in between Knoxville and Nashville. And call first. What engine do you have?
Detroit.
Okay. But when I put you on hold, if Lisa's listening, she'll pick back up and she'll give you all the details.
Okay. That'll work. I sure appreciate it.
And as far as Landstar, keep doing exactly what you're doing. And you don't need, and you're not, but you don't need to get in any big hurry. You know, you might want to fill out the application, get the process started, but keep doing exactly what you're doing, which is talking to people and working through the details to see if it's for you.
Okay. I sure appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I'm going to put you back on hold. Lisa's going to pick back up there. And I'm off to, where am I going, Lisa? I guess she's not going to come on and tell me.
I am going to come on and tell you. At the bottom is Ronald in Illinois. He's a Landstar driver.
Okay.
And I think he's going to tell you his experience of running with Landstar.
Perfect. I'm going to go to Illinois to grab Ronald. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going?
Going good.
Good. I had two things. One, I want to give that guy some insight on Landstar.
Good.
Real quick. First, though, I was going to ask about those side skirts and what the guy said about them catching wind in a crosswind more often than not sounded kind of, it made sense to me, and I was thinking, is there some way, like, to put in some sort of, basically, some skirting, but just around the tandems back there? Maybe they start the side skirts, like, maybe, I don't know how far out, but maybe 4 foot in front of the tandems going back at an angle from the center of the trailer, maybe to would be something that worked. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, and I guess this is where I am on the trailer aerodynamics, is that we haven't spent enough time on it. It just became a priority maybe a couple years ago when fuel spiked. And it really points out the idea of, we can look at something and have this wonderful idea, and then when we put it out in the real world, it doesn't always work the way we wanted it to. And that's just part of, you know, developing things. You know, I've talked to a ton of people who have all kinds of wild ideas about how to fix the tractor-trailer air gap. But, you know, to actually take that idea and manufacture a product and make it work in the real world over hundreds of thousands or millions of miles on multiple trucks in multiple operations, that's a whole nother story. And I think that's what we're running into. You know, people have ideas, well, let's just slap some, you know, aluminum skirts on the side and it'll fix everything. And it doesn't always. So now what are the other ideas? Because once the air gets under the trailer, we have a couple problems. First of all, the underside of a trailer is ugly. It's all ribs and beams and, you know, it's catching a lot of air. And then we have the tandems themselves. So it always seemed to me like, why don't the trailer manufacturers make a smooth bottom trailer? That would eliminate part of the problem.
Yeah, sure would. I would think so anyway.
Yeah, let's just cover the bottom. Let's just cover those ribs up so we have a nice smooth bottom. That would seem to, but again, you know, that's my idea. It seems simple enough. Doesn't always work in the real world. You're maybe a combination of cover the bottom, the belly, so it's nice and smooth, and then create some sort of fairings just around the tandems, and maybe we should leave the bottom open. Maybe we shouldn't block off the whole thing because of the side winds.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes sense to me, definitely. And I appreciate what you're doing, talking about real world stuff, because, you know, that's what you guys are doing all the time. You're coming up with something and trying to apply it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, but at least you guys are giving it real world. You know, it's out in the real world, the stuff you guys are doing.
Well, you know, and you know, I try to follow other companies that are testing devices and testing ideas, and it's just amazing when you look at something and you go, well, wow, that's so easy. Let's just do this. And no matter how hard you try, you don't seem to come up with all the problems until you get it out in the real world and go, wow, I never expected that to happen.
Yeah. Well, let me give you some, or that last caller, I didn't catch his name, but give him some insight on Landstar. I've got a couple of friends that run flatbeds for other companies, and I drive a dry van, and I can tell you over here at Landstar, I run circles around those guys. You know, just because you're running a flatbed or a step deck doesn't mean that, you know, you can't get into a dry van situation over here, even without your own trailer, and still make just as much money, if not more money, and you've got less time wrapped into tarping and chaining and doing all the stuff that they do and most places aren't getting paid for nowadays.
That's one thing.
Yeah, that's one thing I want to put out there. The other thing, as far as the settlement goes, at the most, you're going to pay for everything over here, you know, at Landstar. You know, you're paying for your pre-pass. If you want one, you're paying for computer access, but not just the computer. You're not paying for the computer access. You're paying for the load alerts. If you want that emailed to you or you want to come into your a telephone call coming to your cell phone, you're going to pay for that. You won't actually pay for the computer access itself. But, you know, those are things that for anybody personally, I say, you know what, for the $3 or $4 a week that it actually costs, it's well worth it, you know, to be able to drive down the road and have that computer calling you up or I have it emailed to me, and then I just have my phone pick up my email. That's the quickest way, and I don't have to answer the phone every couple of minutes or something, because sometimes you'll get a flood of loads coming through on the phone.
Right.
But,
and today with smartphones and email, it's such a breeze. You have it emailed to you. When you want to look at it, you can look at it right on your phone. You know what I've found is if we take all of those tools that are available, you know, load alert systems, load board systems, when it comes right down to it, even if we were to add it all up and we spent $100 a month on stuff like that, that's still pennies compared to what it could make back for us.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And I'll tell you, all my settlements with insurance, your you know, unladen liability insurance, which is your bobtail insurance, basically. My plates, which they do, they do it in 6 month intervals on your plates, but you don't pay for the full 6 months. So that, let's say it's like, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but we'll say 4 months that you're paying for your 6 month plate, and then you'll have a week or two of nothing, and then you'll start on the second 6 months. Well, coming up here, I'm almost done with my plates for the year. But when my settlements, the everything being taken out of my settlements at a maximum, we're talking less than $200 a week,
yeah.
And that was everything. You know, and that really, and guys can talk about all day long about, you know, well, they nickel and dime you to death. Well, you can nickel and dime yourself to death, but for the work that they do and the system that they have set up in place, you know, I've been over here since October now, and I tell you, coming from a company driver standpoint, or anybody that's not, you know, that's forced dispatch or even getting paid by the mile versus a percentage, When you come over here, you're going to love the freedom as long as it's something, you know. Now, some people need the discipline and need somebody telling them where to go and what to do. But if somebody that has an entrepreneurial spirit, somebody that doesn't want someone telling them where to do and where to go and how to do it all the time, then this is the place to go. You know, you're going to be so much happier over here.
I agree. Usually the people that I find, not always, but usually the people that I find, if I find somebody who was unhappy there or somebody who left, it's typically because they're just not able to manage that kind of freedom.
Yeah, I tell you, and once you get, you were telling that guy that, you know, once you get used to the system, my first month was, it was pretty tough, and I had some days that I was sitting for most of the day because I wasn't ahead of myself as far as loads,
right.
You know, because I was just starting out. I'm trying to learn things, you know. I don't want to end up, if you're driving anywhere as a company driver or as an owner-operator, you know what parts of the country you don't want to go in, or if you go in, you know you're going to have a deadhead to get back out to a load. You know, all
right.
of that stuff will start coming into play. It took me that first month probably, but I got a pretty quick learning curve. It probably took a little less than that. But now, I don't care where I'm at. I'm not sitting a whole day, even if I get in and you have, like, I've had recently some loads that they didn't have enough freight, and the loads canceled on me. And, I mean, it wasn't maybe 15, 20 minutes, and I had another load lined up and ready to go. And the other thing about Landstar is that you don't want to work off the computers. They'll tell you this all the time. You do not want to work off of that load board. You want to build relationships with
exactly.
the agent.
Yeah, I've been telling people that for years. The computer there is there. The load board system is there to help you fill in, but mostly what you want to do is start developing relationships with the agents. That's the way to go, and that just takes time. And the longer you're there, the better you get at it. Hey, I'm going to cut you loose, put you back on hold. I got to get to some calls here before we run out of time. We are off to Denver this time. Todd, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going this evening?
Going good. What's on your mind?
Well, I just got a SOS on my last oil sample from Caterpillar.
Okay.
And I'm running the OPS-1 on this truck. It's a 06 C15 A-cert. And my iron's been steadily increasing. Let me give you a little background. In January, I had a head gasket replaced.
Okay.
Just before that oil sample, my iron was 23. My next sample after getting that head gasket, it was 54. I just tested it today. I got 46,000 miles on Shell Rotella synthetic, and my iron was 107.
Yeah, that's kind of high.
My soot was also steadily going up. It's been 6, 14, and this time it was 21.
Yeah, see, CAT uses a whole different system to measure soot, and I don't have the conversion. I'm used to a percentage, so if we have like 2% soot, I know what that means. But whatever system of measurement CAT uses, I need to get that. I need to find somebody, some way that I can convert that over. Are they flagging the soot for any reason?
Not at all. They just told me that I need to drain my oil and change all my filters. They didn't find any iron in the oil sample that I gave them. Okay, they want me
hey,
to check.
Are you going to be able to be on the call tomorrow night?
I will be. I heard that Tom was going to be there. So
Tom's, you know, when it comes down to some of the nitty gritty, Tom's really good at this, and he may be able to give you a better answer than I'll be able to give you tonight.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the viscosity was still, you know, 15.4.
And this is a standard Shell mineral oil, right?
Yeah, it's Shell Rotella synthetic, the 540.
Oh, no, it is a 540 synthetic. then it's the viscosity might actually be climbing a little bit, and that would be due to this soot. But again, have you taken have you sent in any samples to Horizon, to OPS's lab?
No, I have not.
Okay. You may want to send one sample to them, and we could kind of compare the two. I know for me, I like their lab better than just about anybody else's. It's more in-depth. It's easier to read. And it never hurts, even if you have another lab that you like. It never hurts once in a while to pull two samples and send them off to two different labs and see what we're getting as far as results. I mean, I'm not hearing anything in this that's horrible. You said they wanted you to drain it, though. What is their reasoning for draining the oil?
They want me to drain the oil and change the filters and, like I said, cut open the main filter and see if I see any iron particles in there. I go through about, in 20,000 miles, I'll go through about a gallon and a half of oil.
Which is nothing. I mean, that's a good tight engine.
It will drip out through the blow by tube. Not like constant drip, but it's always wet down there on that cross member there.
Yeah, which means we're losing a little bit there. So oil consumption certainly isn't a problem. Only putting in a gallon in that amount of time also means that we are going to see higher numbers on things. We have to take that into account because if you take a truck that uses, 4 gallons of oil in that time, well, now you've got 4 new gallons of oil in an 11-gallon system. You know, that's 40%. I mean, we put a lot of new oil in there. So when you're not putting in a lot of new oil, we expect to see the numbers go up. That iron doesn't sound to me like it's any reason to replace the oil. Hey, why don't we wait till tomorrow night, though, and see what Tom says?
You want me to hold off on changing the oil for right now?
Were you planning on doing it tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow morning, but I can wait.
Since you've got synthetic in there and it's a pretty expensive oil change, I would wait. Let's see what Tom says.
Okay. Yeah, I just remember, my old 6NZ motor, my iron would always stay around 14 or so.
Yeah, but you were probably changing the oil every 12 or 15,000 miles, too.
No, I had the OPS on it. I swapped it over from that truck to this one.
Oh, so it was staying down that low even with extended drains, huh?
Yeah. My soot would stay down around 10 and oxidation was only about 16, but, this Acer motor, everything's just all over the place.
Well, they are, and we need to make sure that we're comparing, apples to apples. We can't really compare it to your 6NZ because they just don't run like your 6NZ did.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do is I won't waste any more of your time tonight, and I'll get back in tomorrow night.
Okay, I appreciate it. And you're certainly not wasting my time, that's for sure. That's what the show is all about. Let's go to Indiana. Vince, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, I called you the other night telling you about the Volvo EGR stuff that I did, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put one of those Equipers on my truck when I get back home.
Okay.
I got it sitting there waiting for me. Hey, what kind of oil consumption am I going to get leaving the oil in there for that long of a time? Because right now I don't really even probably use a half a gallon between changes at 20,000 miles.
I don't see any increase in oil consumption. In fact, sometimes we see a decrease. Really depends on the truck and how we're comparing. If the oil stays clean, then consumption usually goes down. But normally what you'll find is that if you used to change your oil at 15,000 miles and it would use, let's just call it 1 gallon, and we go to say, the 10-inch Echo Pure, which allows us to go 25,000 miles between filter changes, we're probably still going to put in a gallon at 15,000. We may, after changing a filter, put in another gallon at 25, and then again at 40. So we're going to stay pretty close to that same oil consumption because the filter is going to be keeping the oil clean.
Yeah, because I noticed the dirtier the oil gets, the more it starts going through it. But if you clean it, if you change it before it gets too dirty, then it doesn't use any at all. So it, you know, passes that point, and then it goes through oil like crazy.
Right.
Not this truck,
right.
But my other truck's like that. After 15,000, it goes to a gallon a week. But before it hits that 15,000 mark, it doesn't use anything.
Yeah, exactly. So what you tend to find is the engine will respond almost exactly the way it did before. It will treat the filter change almost like an oil change. So you're going to still use a gallon at 15 and, you know, somewhere around 30 and that kind of – you shouldn't see any real change in the oil consumption.
So somehow these engines kind of figure out as long as the oil's not too dirty, it doesn't start using oil until it gets dirty enough, huh?
Right. Well, you know what happens, and I think I've asked people this for years, why does it burn more as it gets dirtier? And what happens is it's similar to when we switch from a mineral to a synthetic, that the rings seat themselves based on the viscosity of the oil that's in there most of the time. They seat themselves and they work the way they're supposed to. As that oil gets dirtier, the viscosity changes, and now things don't fit the way they used to. So the dirtier the oil becomes and the more we change the viscosity in either direction, it seems like the more oil we burn. If we keep the oil clean and we keep the viscosity constant, then our oil consumption seems to stay about the same.
Yeah, well, since I blocked off all the EGR on this thing, it doesn't even use as much oil as it used to before within 20,000 miles. So I hope
you're
keeping it clean, then it should stay better.
Exactly. That's what happened. When we went to EGR, we're bringing hot, dirty, sooty air back into the combustion chamber, and our oil got really dirty. That's why they had to change. They've changed oil formulation several times since EGR to try to keep up with it so that we can hold that soot in suspension. So when we minimize the amount of exhaust gas being recirculated, then we minimize how dirty the oil gets and our oil consumption goes down.
Well, I noticed a difference right away because my little green dipstick after 6,000, 7,000 miles, you can still see green dipstick. You don't see, you know, a big hunk of black oil on it when you check it after it gets cold.
Yeah, yeah. EGR engines are really dirty. There's just no two ways about it.
No, that's the nastiest thing they ever did to these dang things, is put all that dirt back inside the motor.
I know. And now International still trying to convince us that they can return 50 or 55% of the exhaust gas and keep the engine running right.
Yeah, they do. The oil changes at 35 and 40,000 miles on a lot of these things now. I can imagine the oil's going to look pretty ugly by that point.
It's got to be nasty. I mean, it would be very interesting to see an oil sample from one of the new Max Force 15s. I'd like to see what they look like.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing with this thing. Since I've worked on it, the computer I know is not a real good way of telling what kind of fuel mileage you're getting, but lately it's been staying around 7, 7.1, 7.2 for the last couple of weeks since I changed the oil and reset it, and I've been driving 60, 65 most of the time, so I've been doing really good with this thing, and I only got a 12-liter in here.
Well, you know what the computer is good for? The computer, in my opinion, is good for comparison purposes, and it's good for helping us adjust our driving habits. It may not be exactly accurate. We always want to do it on paper to get, you know, our true fuel mileage. But the one thing I found on the computers is that they stay pretty consistent. So if we were doing one thing, getting 6.5 over and over and over on the computer, and we make a change and now we're getting 7, well, the computer told us that things got better. And I trust them for those kind of things. Now, it may turn out that our fuel mileage really used to be 6.3, and now it's 6.8, but we still are able to track increases. So the computer, when it comes to fuel mileage, still is a useful tool.
Yeah, I've noticed because I haven't hit 7 with this thing in, jeez, a long old time.
Well, that's good.
So I know something's doing a lot better. I filled up in Tennessee in Knoxville. I went all the way down to South Carolina and back up to Indiana, and I only took like 126 gallons or 160-some gallons, 162 gallons.
Good.
So I'm pretty happy with it. I just hope nothing else blows up on it, costs me more money, but it's running great since I blocked off all the EGR stuff on it.
Excellent. Well, keep us updated on how that's going.
Yeah, when I get that OPS thing on here, I guess I'll have you look at the oil sample because I have no idea what I'm looking at on that thing.
Yeah, this call, the podcast, is always a great place to do that because we have plenty of time. And once you send your sample into the lab, then we have access to it here. So when you call in, Lisa will screen your call. She'll get the information, look up the sample, and then I can, you know, see the sample, and we have plenty of time to go over it. So what I've found is the more often you have somebody go over your sample with you, the more you start to learn. That was really how I learned. I mean, I would pick up a sample, and I would call Tom and say, Tom, let's go over this. And over the years, the more I do that, now it's just one of those things you look at a sample and you know exactly what you're looking at right away.
Yeah, I'm sure after I go over it a few times with you, I'll start learning it, but I've never even looked at one before, so it's going to be foreign until I start learning what I'm looking at.
Oh, yeah, when you first look at it, it's like it might as well be written in French.
Yeah, I know. But, hey, I really appreciate your show, man. You guys, you're so much information and, you know, I never even thought of doing stuff to my truck until listening to your show. I listen to every opportunity I get. I love it. I put everybody on hold just to listen to you guys at night.
Well, I appreciate it.
I wish you had 3 hours every day instead of just the hour during the week.
Well, I'd love to have 3 hours sometime in the afternoon, but we'll see.
Hey, I'm there every day I get the opportunity I can. Especially on Sirius, it's easy, but on my phone it's not always so easy because of reception.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call, and I'm looking at the clock, and it looks like we are out of time. So I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. Stick around because the live show is coming up in just about 30 minutes on Sirius XM, so join us for that. Tune back in tomorrow night for questions from the Audio Road. We'll do it again tomorrow night. Bring your questions, your comments, your topics, whatever it might be. We can even do some politics tomorrow night if you'd like. We'll send out an email. Now, I guess we won't do politics. I guess we have Tom on tomorrow night. So we will be talking about oil samples, oil analysis. If you've got oil sample reports, either from OPS labs or from any other lab, if you can send those to us or have them right in front of you when you call tomorrow night. We'll spend as much time as we need to on your sample so you understand it. If it's if it is the OPS lab, Lisa will be able to pull the sample up for us. And then next week, I think what we're going to try to do is actually have a technician from the lab, somebody who works with oil samples every day. And we'll get even more in-depth because what I'm finding is the more time I spend on oil analysis, the more we are really able to use it as a diagnostic tool for the engine. We're able to find more conditions earlier and head off problems much better with good, consistent oil analysis. All right, we'll see you in 30 minutes on Sirius XM, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow night. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.